Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 558. And I'm joined today by John Poynting. You'll hear in my voice as we have this conversation how excited I am. I fucking adore John Poynting. John has been on before, but he came on with Jack Rook when series one of Big Boys was about to come out. Series two has just wrapped up and it was amazing. John's also been in more things this year that I really adored. He was also on Chatterbix, which is one of my favourite podcasts, so go and check that episode out. So basically, it's me being excited to catch up with John, and we get into it. If you've not watched Big Boys Series 1 and Series 2, give them a watch. There aren't spoilers, so you don't have to watch them before this, but honestly, as I mentioned in the TV Shows of the Year episode, and on social media loads, it's just an astounding show. Right, okay, well, we're brought to you as ever by SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com. That's where you can buy merch, support the podcast that way. Or you can head to patreon.com/ScroobiusPip to support the podcast on Patreon. That really helps pay all the bills. And come over to twitch.tv/ScroobiusPip, you know, and hang out and see what I'm up to. I've been doing some weird stuff over there recently. Genuinely very strange. People have inquired as to whether I'm all right. So it's worth watching just for that, surely. But for now, this is episode 558 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with the wonderful John Poynting. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. We're definitely rolling. I'm here today with John Poynting. And before I ask how you are, let's continue our conversation, because we were just talking about our mutual friend Jack Rook, writer and creator of Big Boys. I mean, the person who you were on with last time, so it feels bad that I've got you on your own and we're going to start by talking about how great Jack is. But he's wonderful, isn't he? And yeah, I was saying, because I've known him since he was like 18 or so.
Yeah.
Just I booked him for early spoken word gigs.
Yeah, I think I remember him, because he'll sort of drop it in a conversation sometimes. Like, I'll be like, oh, yeah, back then I was even hosting his sort of things like whilst he was at uni and stuff.
I think he hosted a fair bit while he was figuring out what he was as such. But because he was always like, there was a point where he was a poet and then he was a comedian and then he was always just great. He'd always entertain. But is he getting up and doing a poem, or is he he's perfect as a host, I'd say, as well, because he is.
I guess everyone just needs an entry point, don't they? And his happens to be poetry, and to get to wherever it is you end up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I will note that in series two of Big Boys, you did spoken word dirty man. or Jack did. The representation of the spoken word. No, it cracked me up. It was perfect.
It's funny, isn't it? I feel like he's everything he does, every time I've seen him live in a show, he always has to sort of like really take a swipe at spoken word. But I think it's because obviously that's what he did, isn't it?
He's right to. Like, it's one of the things that
has it become such a sort of, it's definitely become a sort of go-to.
Yeah.
To like, there's a few people that have sort of like taken, do you know what I mean? It's earnestness or something.
It's right, because in a way it's lazy, because slagging off spoken word is like slagging off music.
Right.
Because there's such a variation in it.
Yes.
And you don't generally go, oh, music, it's so stupid, it's so earnest. You know, because there's huge variation in spoken word. But the thing that myself and Kay Tempest and Polar Bear, who kind of trained Jack for a lot of things, and then Jack and people like that, one of the things that we connected over was, as working class people in this world, you go to a lot of gigs and you are sitting there going, look at all these wankers. Just let me get up and do my slot, or give him my free drink, or whatever I'm entitled to as a performer.
Yeah.
Because there would be a lot of pretension and a lot of people who really think they're amazing, whereas there's loads who don't. Like, the reason we all met in the spoken word scene is because we were the ones who didn't have that ego, I guess. But
I suppose comedy's always looking for people that are like taking themselves seriously, which is sort of sometimes to its detriment, I think, because sometimes there is this, you can't take anything seriously to the point where it has a negative impact, I think.
But then, and obviously we're going to go all over the place in this chat, but another area that takes themselves seriously is actors.
Yeah.
And that can be a target for comedians like yourself.
Yeah.
In your Fringe show that I came to see, the first thing I saw you do live was
your Fringe show where you were playing an acting coach.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful because...
Similar thing, basically. I think like that is a trope in comedy, is that sort of character I did. I feel like every year there's a version of that show up at the Fringe. Yeah. Because probably a comedian or an actor has gone through that experience and it's just fertile ground,
it's weird, isn't
it?
What is it? Because I don't know if it is the earnestness, because there's nothing wrong with earnestness. Like that can be a beautiful thing if you're taking your art seriously. But there's something about it in certain people, whether it's actors or poets, I think it's an ego on top of that.
Definitely.
It's a belief that your art is, like, it's fine to take your art seriously, but it's slightly different to think that your art is the most important thing in the world, or even that everyone else should take your art seriously. I think that's the line that gets crossed there.
Yeah, I think you're
take
right.
Your art seriously, but don't assume that everyone else should. Other people are well in their right to go, fuck off, mate, I don't like poetry.
Yeah, but I also think it's that thing of, like, those sort of people, whether it's actors or poets or whatever, that they take themselves very seriously, seem to be taking the work very seriously, but I'm also a bit like, I don't know if they're really doing work.
Mm.
They're more like talking about it.
Yeah.
So like, right, we get into a rehearsal room and the hardest thing sometimes is to get people off their feet because people love sitting down and talking about it.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I suppose, yeah, I think it's that.
I'm about to go against everything that we've said here and quote one of my own lyrics. But in one of my songs, I had a line that, again, a lot of the people in the spoken word scene that I got on with loved. And it was just, you know, it's enlightening. I see a lot of kids that love being writers more than they love writing.
Yeah.
And it's that thing. It's like, I love being an actor. I'm not really into the acting part of it, but I love being a poet.
I think it's because it's the sort of work where it's really hard to actually be the thing.
Yeah.
It's really rare that someone is going to be an actor, is going to be a writer, is going to be a poet. So you are sort of cosplaying at it most of the time.
I was going to say, it's that balance, isn't it? It's hard to be the thing and it's also the easiest to be...
To
declare you are the
exactly,
thing.
Like,
I'm a stand-up.
Yeah, for years I'd go around. I just feel so gross about saying I was an actor. Not because I didn't like it, but just because I wasn't really doing it. I didn't have any work to talk of, you know. So maybe when there is that void of the work, people sort of fill it with kind of, you know, that's when they start kind of saying, yeah, I'm running a course and I'm doing this and I'm sort of exercising, basically.
Yeah, yeah. There's a poet I used to gig with a lot called Inuit Ellums, who was amazing. And I remember him saying once that you can't call yourself, like his line was, you can't call yourself a poet. Other people can call you a poet, but you can't call yourself a poet. And I always quite like that. I don't necessarily agree because maybe it's putting on too hard a thing, but I quite like that because if you are going around going, oh yeah, I'm a poet, then it's, that's got the pretension. Whereas you do poetry, people can declare you a poet, but... It's a different thing if you start to think of yourself.
Are they sort of less cynical about it in America? I remember I went to see a Poetry Night in Chicago once and it was incredible.
Yeah.
And there just seemed to be, in general, no one was very, I don't know.
It's tough, isn't it? I think when anything gets popular, so again, kind of, there was a period probably just before Jack, or just as Jack was getting into poetry, where slam poetry became the thing, and you go into a poetry slam and you're competing against other poets, and it suddenly became, it wanted to be a bit 8 Miley, but it's
right
kids who went to RADA. and it was just a bit, number one, it seemed dumb to me because art is subjective. It's like...
Yeah, to sort of turn it into this sort of competition. Yeah,
to
put,
to say tonight,
one poet will rule them all.
Big boys up against Derry Girls. Yeah, who's going to win? Yeah. It's like, well, no.
Well, Derry Girls, apparently.
I don't know. It's tough.
They did do that.
That happened.
Yeah, that did happen.
But yeah, it's kind of, it's that weird thing of you have to have one person win. And then at the end of the night, as if it means anything. Because on another night, you could have had the exact same poets doing the exact same poems and the voters would have voted differently because it's subjective.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, that's what's quite nice about it, isn't it, really? Is it's not supposed to be about who's best at things, but, you know, people like to do that, don't they?
What are we here to talk about again? I feel we're 10 minutes in. I don't know where it's going. How are you, man?
I'm good.
How was your holiday? Because you went on holiday as Series 2 of Big Boys was coming out.
Yeah, I think I got back the day it came out on TV.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's one more episode to come out as we're talking now.
Yeah.
So I sort of came
back. This is coming out in a month or so. But
okay, so yeah, it'll all be. I mean, everyone's sort of watched it now
it's
already.
All been, it's all bingeable. On the four.
So I've sort of been doing, you know, a bit of press for it, but kind of coming back down to earth a little bit from the trip. The trip was incredible.
Tell me a bit about it, man, because you went everywhere, right? It was.
I went to New York just before Christmas. Then we went to Canada and had Christmas in sort of, you know, the middle of nowhere in a cabin, you know, surrounded by snow. And then Tokyo for New Year's, and then we went to Thailand, yeah.
That's insane. And it's, are you and your wife, right?
Yeah.
That's amazing. How long were you away? That's a fair
It was only a month, actually. So we did sort of cram it in, potentially too much for a month. But we just were kind of, I don't know, we just had this thing in our head of actually going around the world. It was a problem when we landed in Japan, and it was suddenly we were like a day and a half ahead of where we were.
Right.
Yeah, jet lag, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
I love it though, because I think you've done it pretty much right, because I've always felt, and people disagree with this massively, I think 2 weeks anywhere is too long. Yeah. I don't think there's anywhere
can
I want to go on holiday. I'm bad at relaxing. I think that's exactly it. I'm not great at relaxing. Whereas going in a cabin for like 4 or 5 days, beautiful.
Yes.
And then off
somewhere else. For four, it was good
days,
for that.
Beautiful.
It was perfect for that. We're
no time to get bored of it and feel you're wasting your time there.
Yeah, I sort of struggle to relax too. I'm sort of round a pool I struggle with. Beach is slightly better. I can sort of entertain myself there a bit more.
Mm. Yeah.
It's rocks and things to look at. You know,
things to swim in, climb on, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. But it was lovely. And I'm sort of slowly coming back into, you know, having to think more than just like what I'm going to have for lunch today.
Yeah.
Since being back, which is, you know, stressful, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a different pace. How do you find the PR side of things? Because again, it's kind of, it's probably exciting to get to be in demand for stuff. But then also, how do you find that? Talking about your work, promoting your work?
I think I'm okay with it. It depends. Like, this is nice. I think I prefer the sort of long form, rambling kind of bit of it. I think sometimes when you've got to do this sort of shorter stuff for TV or it's sort of condensed down, I find that a bit trickier.
You've got to have priorities of what you want to do. And I just want to give a quick quote. Just get me on Chatterbix. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
good to have you on Distraction Pieces. What's going on? Just get me on Chatterbix. That's all I care about. All right. We had this booked in at that point when I was hearing that. I was like, all right, cool.
Well,
cool,
I knew
cool.
I'd got that already. Yeah.
It's good though, isn't it? They got you in your pants and everything.
They got me in my pants. It didn't take them long either.
Such a good episode. I love those boys though. That's such a good podcast. Are you a listener?
I'm a listener, I do love it. Yeah, it, like you say, it's the PR side of things. It's strange, isn't it? It is weird. It's a kind of, I don't know, there's something dark arty about it all.
Yeah, yeah.
that I'm getting used to. Well, I'm again, sort of coming, you know.
I'm getting more and more guests on that are realising, like when I had Andrew Haig on recently, who's a director I adore. He did all of Us Strangers and 45 Years and all that. He finished the episode. And again, he's someone I really look up to. And he was saying to the PR people, can we do more of these and less of the, as you say, the five-minute thing where all they're asking about is Paul and Andrew kissing in the film and all the really base things. Is like, because you get to have an hour conversation, it feels less dark artsy. It feels less,
well,
here's what we're going to say.
This, I'm not saying this. I suppose it's, you're putting yourself as like, you're sort of selling yourself, aren't you?
Mm.
And I think like, you know, I think last series, like I've never had sort of like PR and stuff before. And I think I didn't because I don't know, just sort of, but I also don't want to look like I'm not playing along. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
It's a balance.
You can sort of seem like you sort of don't, you're not interested. And I think quite a big part of me isn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you got to find
it's
out, haven't you?
And it's that thing. It can be really easy to look kind of entitled if you're there being like, oh, fucking hell, I've got to do this today. It's like,
yeah,
you're in a show and it's going down well. And it's
exactly. There's that the side balance of it. So,
Just on Chatterbix again, I promise I won't talk completely about
No, we can Chatterbix. Talk about Chatterbix.
I was driving home as I was listening to it. I was driving home from Scotland and I only managed to make notes in traffic. So one note was just get me on Chatterbix. That's all I care about.
I'm so sorry.
And the other note was flying fox. And I've no idea what that note was. Do you remember talking about a flying fox?
You've got to Google flying fox.
Right.
It's like real.
Maybe I made a note not for the podcast, just for me to Google it.
It's real nightmarish stuff.
Really?
They're so big.
How big?
Well, like the size of a fox, but with massive wings, like bat wings. And they are, I mean, it's a bat, but they're terrifying. And I basically, at night, I thought I was looking at all these sort of big kind of massive birds coming home to sort of nest.
Right, where was this?
This is in Thailand.
In Thailand.
And then I sort of, as I went out there, I was like, they're bats. You can, you know, obviously the wings are bat shapes.
Wow.
It was terrifying. But then I became quite obsessed and I'd sort of stand out there every night waiting for them to sort of come back. Yeah, like a massive seagull, but a bat, maybe
but
bigger.
A bat that looks like a fox, essentially, because they are quite fox-like, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, incredible.
I mean, that's terrifying. Was there anything else on your trip that kind of was the culture shock? Because I always remember the first time I was sitting for a friend in LA once, and I was taking him for a walk. And I think they'd mentioned it, but it didn't really cross my mind. And just at the end of the road was a coyote or a dingo or something that would have eaten the dog. And
wait, it was like, I thought that was a dog.
Yeah, but they're wild dogs, aren't they? So they're out there. And it was just that kind of thing of getting there and being like, just looking at it and going like, all right, I'll go the other way, I guess. Because back home, if I'm walking a dog, I don't have to think about things eating it.
No.
It was literally in that area in LA, you can't, most of the gardens are like caged off kind of thing. So the dog can play outside because there are these wild animals. It's not a dingo. It's probably not a coyote either, is it? No, I'm going to sound stupid now because it's a really well-known thing. But yeah, that was a thing that I remember thinking there. Oh, it is different from England.
Yeah.
Did you have that hit you the most?
I mean, I was hoping to see more wildlife in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I did leave some food out, which they did specifically say not to do. I left a sandwich out. I left a sandwich out for a bear.
For a bear. I was thinking like a deer or an elk, maybe.
I would have been happy with either of those. That'd have been lovely.
But a bear you were trying to...
I wanted to see a bear.
Lure in.
But
you didn't have any honey.
I didn't have any honey. Maybe that was the mistake. And also the sandwich just sort of froze to the ground immediately.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you're not supposed to do that. Or go for a walk on your own. I did that. And they give you this thing called it's a bear bell.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to sort of shake it as you're walking to be like, human come in.
To scare off the bears.
But it feels a bit more dinner belly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, come and get it.
Because it's just this quite nice, they were jingle bells. They were actual jingle bells. And I'm sort of walking around shaking it as I'm walking. And then it's when that moment hit me when I realised I could be advertising dinner.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to go back now.
Do you think that's a prank that they play on
Airbnb
tourists?
Host. Yeah,
every time you walk around, ring the bell, everyone else in the village is like, ah. Oh,
so terrified of like a three-star review.
John's got someone at his Airbnb again. He's pranked him to just walk around ringing a bell.
Yeah.
All right, guys, just scaring off the bears. All right, are you?
An Airbnb come bear feeder. Yeah.
I love it. Well, I want to talk about your route into acting and everything. And I want to talk about Big Boys because, as you know, I think it's one of the best things ever. I adore it. And Series 2 crushed me as much as Series 1 did. But before we get on to that, I want to talk about Smothered because I love that as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah, thank you.
I messaged you about it at the time. I can't remember what... Yeah, I must have just seen it advertised, but... Tell me a little bit about Smothered, or tell the listeners a little bit about Smothered.
So Smothered, it's a rom-com, and the sort of the conceit of it is that these two people meet and they're sort of done with dating. They're done with kind of like meeting someone, being with them for a while, then it all kind of falling apart and it all gets kind of messy.
Mm.
So it's like, let's just have a three-week thing. Let's not learn anything about each other and we'll just have fun and then we can part our separate ways. And that'll be... You know, no complications. But guess what?
There's complications.
There's complications.
I mean, I love it as a concept in general.
Yeah. I think it's sort of like supposed to be kind of anti kind of dating apps and the kind of like having to sort of give everyone a little profile about yourself before you meet them. It's funny, I was with a mate the other day and he'd just had this sort of basically, he'd gone through the dating apps thing. He'd met this girl, had a couple of dates with her. He was sort of annoyed. He'd told me that he wasn't really interested in pursuing it. But then because she had sort of shut it down, he was kind of annoyed and wanted more of an explanation. I was like...
The classic fragile male ego.
And also just like, why are you... You're sort of... You want the relationship thing for this person that you've I thought the point was that you've gotten out from that. You can just be like,
I've definitely seen people before, and thankfully not anyone I would consider an actual friend. I've definitely seen people get dumped, fight to get their partner back, essentially they can end it.
Oh God.
Because it's like they were dumped, but their ego isn't allowing them to have that. They have to be the good guy. So then they do everything they can to get back and then go, oh yeah, I was going to win this anyway. So let's call it a day.
So yeah, I think it's supposed to sort of be anti that stuff. But then my character has got a kid and that sort of complicates things. But it was nice to be playing someone sort of more my own age. I think that's what I enjoyed about it.
I was going to ask, how was it playing a dad? Because you've not got kids, right?
No.
No. But yeah, how was it playing dad? Because again, it's a good counter to Big Boys, because you're playing a student in Big Boys and he's meant to be a slightly older
Jack wrote that in, I think, for me. I hope so, anyway.
He just adjusted it. So, yeah.
Well, to be fair, that happens to me a lot. It's like in Smothered, I read that script. Sometimes, you know what it's like? Sometimes there'll be a script and it gets sort of pinged around for ages whilst they try and get all the, you know, everything in, basically the right recipe for it to go ahead. And I did an audition for it, didn't hear anything for ages. And I was like, okay, well, that's not happened. And then a mate of mine was like, can you give me a hand with this audition? It was for that part. So I was like, okay, I've not got that then.
Yeah.
Did that. Then some more time went past.
You don't want my help on this, mate.
I'm
the guy to help you on this one.
Yeah. it's really sabotaged it. Yeah, so then more time went past and then they suddenly sort of called me back in. But originally in the script, he was a lawyer.
Right.
And then I think when I got the part, that job changed. I think he worked in recruitment. But then even that was too much of a stretch.
Yeah.
it was nice to play, like I say, someone a bit more, just sort of a bit quieter.
Yeah. A relaxed character. I loved it. As I said, it had feelings of Cheaters for me, which was another BBC series I really enjoyed.
Right, yeah.
A Susan Wacoma thing a year or two back. Yeah, it just felt modern and real, if that makes sense. It was on Sky original,
yeah.
Which again, I think a lot of things get overlooked depending on where they come out. And I do it myself. There'll be certain things out on certain channels. Like, oh, I'm not going to. That's probably not going to be very good. And then it'll be amazing.
Yeah.
And then like we were talking about Chatterbix when Joe and David's show, The Cockfields, came out. It was on like UK Gold or something. So I thought, I'll watch it because they're mates.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to be very good. It was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I loved
it. Fantastic.
That show.
And then it was a similar thing here. I think I saw you in it. I was like, I'll give that a look. And I was like, this is fucking great.
Well, that's good. It's good that people, I know what you mean. Everyone has their sort of a handful of things that they go to, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Things that you just sort of forget about. Yeah. I suppose maybe it's what you grew up watching. I just grew up watching the four, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was it.
No, I'm trying to think what I've got big judgments on. And considering I'm trying to get a film made at the moment, I shouldn't talk openly about this, but I don't think I've ever seen like a Sky original movie that I've been like, wow, that was amazing.
Right, yeah.
You don't have to comment on this.
I was just going to say, where do I fall? Is this, do I say?
I think Netflix, I've seen there's been stuff that's been shit, but there's been stuff that's been amazing. I think Amazon, I was talking to Kingsley Benadire recently, who's playing Bob Marley in the new Bob Marley film. He was in an Amazon film called One Night in Miami. And I think that was, for my mind, the first one that made me go, oh, they're making actually good stuff as well. It's not just kind of a straight-to-DVD type idea. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously Film 4 and BBC Film make loads of good stuff. So, yeah, I think I'm only slagging off the movie leg of Sky.
Glad we cleared that.
Glad we got to the bottom of it.
Sky, cinema, that's not going to happen now.
It's not going to work out. Genuinely, I think I generally might have a script in with them at the moment. So this isn't gonna help. What was your route into acting and comedy? Like, where'd you grow up? Like, we were recording in Shoreditch and you were saying you lived around here for a bit. What's been your journey?
I actually worked on Brick Lane in a baby shop very briefly.
In a baby shop?
Yeah. like a shop that sells baby clothes and
right.
stuff.
Yeah, not that sells babies.
It was really weird. Basically, the girl I was going out with at the time was doing fashion and got this job at this sort of, it was like, it was supposed to be a baby shop that was going to be like cool, trendy baby grows. Yeah. Which is weird already.
No, I get it. I know. I remember that point when there was a period of like, it just, it'll have like a lightning bolt or AC/DC baby grow and,
exactly
and things
that.
Like that.
Exactly
there was
that.
One year that me and Dan Lissac did baby grows as merch. So that was
there
the year
go.
That you were working there. It suddenly became a thing.
It was like 2009, I think.
Yeah.
And like,
I guarantee that's genuinely when we sold baby
And it was
grows.
This tiny little shop.
Oh, wow.
And because then she started designing the baby grows and she was like, I always needed a job back then. So
yeah.
I ended up working on the till in this baby shop. And obviously...
Can we get the name of the baby shop?
It's not there anymore. It's called Oh Baby.
Oh Baby.
So it's sort of already you're buying... In 2009, Brick Lane was still a bit kind of rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. And so already you're buying baby clothes there. Then you're buying them from like a 20-year-old, like scruff it. It just was so odd. People would walk in and just think, what's going on here? And I would
mix.
Also be like, I had this look of like, I don't know why.
I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. Do you want a baby grow?
Yeah.
I appreciate it that you might not want to buy it off me.
I love that era though, because that happened to be the era for my age, when loads of my mates were having kids. So
right,
a little
yeah.
cool indie baby grow was such
yeah.
a simple...
It was only on like, yeah, maybe like you say, like a Sunday when people...
Yeah.
Saturday, Sunday when sort of people were visiting Brick Lane
yeah,
would
yeah,
buy
yeah.
it as a gift or
yeah.
buy it.
Yeah.
But also it was that time when, maybe it's less like that, but everywhere on Brick Lane, whether it was a coffee shop or not, the staff behaved like it was a bar, whatever you were selling.
Yeah.
So everyone was out. I would be outside that baby shop smoking most of the time. And then people would come in and I'd put the fag out and come back in and they'd be like, hit you.
You're selling me this.
I'd be like, yeah, yeah, sorry.
It's interesting as well, isn't it? Because I think it is a business that weirdly doesn't actually sell to the people that are going to use the item. Let me explain. It's a business that probably doesn't sell to a lot of parents, but sells to a lot of friends of parents who
right.
are buying it as a gift. Because parents
yeah, yeah,
actually
yeah.
know you don't want a nice baby grow. They're going to throw up in it. They're going to shit in it. Like,
yes.
you don't. It's generally you want whatever baby grow. Whereas
remember,
someone who's getting it as
yeah.
a gift, it's like, I've got you one for best. This is
yes.
this is going to be your main baby grow.
I do remember there was a sort of like quite edgy baby grow that definitely had too many big metal zips on it. For a baby.
Exactly. But someone will get that as
like,
a gift, like, this is so good. It's like, you've not got kids.
It was like
you?
If Camden yeah. Market had made a baby grow, like, it was that, you know, sort of thing.
I love it.
But anyway, what were we saying?
So what was your route into...
Well, it was via a baby shop.
In.
But
baby
I guess
grows.
My route into it was, I first did comedy, I think I
and
was...
And was comedy first, and then
well,
into
Well, I actually, I think after I left uni, so I did drama at uni, and... It wasn't really that intensive as a course.
Yeah.
I've got to try and be polite about it because I feel like in interviews I always sort of slag off my uni and, you know.
And what uni
sure
was it? If
it was
like
Winchester.
Winchester.
And I'm, you know, it wasn't great to be honest, but it was partly my own fault for being
yeah.
a bit naive.
There's definitely
to,
a level of what you...
I just thought yeah. they're all good, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That, when I was applying to uni, I was just like, well, they're all... This university.
It's uni. Yeah.
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 Everyone's going to be really into the subject that they've chosen.
Yeah.
But really, I didn't sort of factor in this sort of like people just wanting to stay, not go to work, basically.
Yeah.
Not quite ready to go into the world of work.
Yeah.
So I was sort of more up for like, I'm ready to sort of like learn now and prepare myself for work. Whereas I think a lot of people are like, no, I'll just sort of doss about for 3 years and then I'll
yeah.
go and work for my dad or something.
Yeah. 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 yeah.
So. Yeah, but maybe, I think it's a bit better now, maybe, I don't know.
Apparently it's fantastic now.
Yeah,
just,
yeah, if you go to Winchester Uni. Like,
absolutely, one of the best.
I found out recently Nick Helm went to Winchester Uni.
Oh, really?
But he did something obscure, like, oh no, he did like, actually I think he did film and video editing
yeah.
or something like that.
It's interesting though, because I think you're right. Like, I went to Wolverhampton Uni, I dropped out after a year, but...
That's the first I've heard of that.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Is it a good one?
No, not really. But again, that's it. I was the same. Like, you hear,
yeah.
you see in TV and in films that people are like, oh, he's got into one of the good unis, or he's got into this, it's fifth in the country, or it's fourth for this. I didn't know about any of that. I was just like, well, it does a course I want to do, and
yeah.
they've accepted me. There
yeah.
wasn't the arrogance of, You've accepted me, but have I accepted you?
Yeah.
What do I think? It's like, it was the excitement, because again, coming from a working class era or whatever, it was like, oh, I've been accepted into uni, this is
Yeah, exactly. The thing. And also, I didn't have, like most people, probably our, you know, sort of generation, so like, we don't have our parents that have had that experience, so they can't really guide you through that. So you're sort of relying on the school. And again, I was unlucky with my school and drama.
Let's slag off your school as well, Ken. We've done the uni.
I mean, I didn't. Yeah, they just didn't see drama as a subject even.
Yeah.
I had to sort of really. I mean, we didn't have a teacher for about 6 months in my last year of doing A level drama, so we were just turning up. There was about six of us that did it, and we were just turning up to this room every week and just being like, "Well, should we just carry on with this play we're learning?" So I didn't have. I sort of think that was part of it as well. If someone had sat me down and be like, you need to go to this uni, you need to try to, for these are the sort of big, in fact, I've just remembered this. When I went to the interview at the uni that I flipping chose, the guy sort of, we did this sort of joint workshop and he went, look, there's only three universities that are worth going to for drama. And just then listed, I think, Manchester and then maybe two of the acting schools in London or whatever. And I was like, oh.
So not
it's not this one, is it?
Not this one. No.
But but I met nice people. I met good people at uni. And I think when I left uni, I was sort of convinced that I was going to try and write plays.
Yeah.
And I was sort of doing my best sort of Harold Pinter impression.
Yeah.
And writing sort of quite stifled, tense, simple.
Yeah.
Sort of dialogue driven plays.
Yeah.
Where sort of people walking into rooms and not saying anything.
All the drama.
So I did actually take a play up to Edinburgh 1 year. It didn't really go, it went okay.
How did that compare going up with a play to going up with comedy or with a drama versus going up with comedy?
Well, if you go to Edinburgh, how many new plays do you see at 11 in the morning?
I would say in the years I've been, I can't think of any new plays I've seen in general.
Something you've never heard
even
of.
Even at the best time.
The blurb doesn't sound that inviting. I think the blurb said nothing happens in it, even.
You do a little bit of research and this kid went to Winchester Uni.
Exactly. And it's 11 in the morning. Yeah, God. So,
it is weird, isn't it? Because you would take more of a risk on comedy. And for comedy, it's hard as well. Again, there's 100%, all these horror stories of the fringe for comedians. Like, but for drama, that's got to be so much harder. Because if I'm just knocking about, like, to sound really disrespectful, if it starts to rain, I might go and see whatever comedian is nearest because I want to get out of the rain.
Whereas
you probably won't go, I'll watch this play.
Also, there's something...
As easily.
Seeing bad comedy is obviously rubbish and it's still bad, but there's this sort of, the setup's different. You're kind of like, you're allowed to look a bit disappointed. You're allowed to look. Theatre has this feeling like, oh God, I can't even just, like if comedy was really bad, you left. That's sort of inbuilt in the culture of doing, of stand up. People shouting out, people leaving. You could do it. In theatre, you just feel a little bit like, oh, it'd be like the play starts and you could be like, fuck. We're here now for an hour.
Clever, I like that, to keep you in though, isn't it? Because also, if you don't enjoy it, part of you will be thinking, did I not get it?
Yeah.
Am I not clever enough? Whereas with comedy, if you don't enjoy it, you'll just be like, well, didn't find that funny. Whereas I've had plays before that I've been like, it's probably above me. Rather than me going, no, that was shit, I've gone, it's probably a bit.
Yeah, or you're like, it's rubbish and I just feel too... I don't know. You just feel it. Just
it feels too
like
personal.
You feels too personal. You feel sorry for the people in it more. I don't know. So yeah, that was a tough sell that year. But I think it was all right. I think the play was okay. Yeah, and then I didn't do it for years, and I was sort of scrambling. I was living around here and sort of enjoying being sort of, you know, that age and poor and in London and you know, all the things that come with that really. And I would do an odd bit of work here and there, but I mainly just worked in other things and pubs and whatever. And then I basically, 1 year, a friend of mine, Kat Bond, who was in a sort of double act, and then she decided to go up to Edinburgh and was like, I'm just going to do half an hour. I'm looking for someone to share it with.
Yeah.
And my sister was like, ask John, he'll do it. And I did. Luckily, because I was... At the time, I'd met my now wife and I knew that she was going up there. And I was like, yeah, I think I might go to Edinburgh, actually. I thought, if I'm going to go out there and try my best to impress her. And if I can... So we went up and we did... Yeah, we shared an hour. And it was really weird. And it was really odd. And it was in a dark little sweaty room. And I just had a great time. It was amazing. And that was sort of... So yeah, that was kind of my first sort of year of comedy. I think that was 2014, I think.
And then... Did you focus on comedy, or did you continue to kind of be whatever comes about? If acting gigs come in,
well, I suppose I think people that do lean more towards sketch tend to be people that are a bit more interested in acting, mm-hmm. to some degree.
Yeah.
And then I went up with my brother-in-law. He'd also been in a sketch group, and then he was going up on his own. And I think for a while he was doing this solo show, but often with solo shows, is you need to bring someone up from the audience, and he started to get a bit tired of that. So he's like, do you want to come and stooge my show, basically?
Yeah.
So you be the other character in all my sketches. So yeah. I did a couple of times where I was just the guy in his show. Yeah. And then we started doing a couple of sketches where I was a bit more in it and a bit more of a comedy character in it. And we started, I mean, one of the first thing I feel like we wrote together was both of us looking out of a balcony on holiday, just saying the word Marbella over and over again. And just sort of like nodding and smiling and going, Marbella. And that was enough.
I love it.
Like really like, yes.
Yeah.
Marbella.
Yeah.
And we did Edinburgh show together and we did, that was when I was more on my first sort of experience of properly being on the circuit, I think. Mm. And it was great. And we sort of, you know, did all the usual kind of pubs and gigs, and I met, you know, started doing Moth Club gigs and things like that. And then I sort of went solo.
Yeah.
And again, they were all quite short-lived little experiences, really. I mean, I only really did solo for 2 years.
Yeah.
As one character as well.
Yeah. And was it up at the Fringe you met Jack, right? Was that Fringe?
Yeah. I'd actually met him at a poetry night a friend of ours put on.
Amazing.
And he kind of put on a sort of poetry comedy night, sort of crossover.
Yeah.
And I'd also just met them through my wife, Scotty, and they were putting on this poetry night called Fraff. And it was over at Rich Mix, actually.
Yeah.
Jack was on and I was on, and I was doing this sort of creepy, guess what, creepy poet, as opposed to creepy actor. I was a creepy poet. We sort of met. I don't think we really kind of... Jack always says that we're a bit off of each other. And I don't know, maybe we were. I don't really think we were off of each other. I think maybe, I mean, I don't know.
Jack was off with you and you didn't notice.
Well, maybe. Or maybe like. I don't know.
I thought he loved me.
Yeah, I don't
thought
know.
Thought went down a treat. Turns out.
Maybe, I don't know. But it was all new to me, that world. You know what I mean? Like, I was so, Scotty, who put that night on, when they asked me to do it, I was so like, me? Why? I don't know. I was sort of kind of flattered, and I found that whole world kind of a bit... If anything, it was probably me being completely uncomfortable and awkward and it coming across as arrogant, which happens, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I feel so out of place and a bit kind of out of my depth in some way that you kind of... That's what happens to me in almost every audition I've ever done.
Yeah.
I've had a note come back to my agent saying he looked like he just wasn't interested.
Yeah. I was so interested.
I honestly get... Because also you're being auditioned, aren't you?
Yeah.
And I sort of want to go in and be like, I mean, I haven't sort of done it for a while, but I want to go in and be like, look, I'm going to go back out. Can we just come in and go straight into it and we do the chat after?
Yeah.
Because
now
I'm this sort of bag of nerves and I want to sort of treat it like it's live or something.
Yeah.
And then maybe if it's rubbish, I'll be like, oh, I'll have this. Once it's over... It's a great feeling is walking out of an audition room because it's over. I don't care if I get the job or not.
Yeah.
I'm not in that position anymore.
You see, I always kind of, and I mean, everything seems to be self-tapes these days, but I always kind of had the opposite in the room was I had, although I would have drilled the scene and loved what I'd done with it at home, I would have lost all confidence in any ability as an actor. So I'd be excited to try and win them over as a person first.
Right.
And then... Here's the thing you've come to see, but we got on, right? You know, we chatted about that comic book store. You know, we found that connection. Because the podcast is often about finding a connection.
Right.
It was so that thing, it's kind of, it felt like that's my superpower, that we can upon entry, we can find something quickly that we click on and have this moment. And then when I do my thing, they're going to be more susceptible to it.
Yeah, that's a massive part of it, isn't it? You're like, I like this person. I want to work with them.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I think often I would come across as like, I don't know where this guy, I don't think he wants to be here. I've even met someone years, I'm Kevin Bishop, I worked with him years later, and I'd auditioned for his pilot.
Yeah.
And he was like, I didn't even think he'd remember me. It was so many years later. And he was like, no, I remember you auditioning for my thing, and I thought you just didn't want to do it.
Mm.
And I was like, I was just, you know, it's just nerves, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's sort of, people assume that you're kind of want to sort of be all bell singing, dancing, just like showing off all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sort of quite hard to make people believe that you don't want to when you're in a room saying, can I be in your TV show?
Yeah, yeah.
Or can I be this in front of everyone doing this thing? So it's like karaoke, isn't it?
Yeah.
People are like, what do you mean you don't want to do karaoke? You're an actor.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'll do it, but watch me drain the energy from this room.
I couldn't relate more to this, because yeah, it's exactly that. I've realised over the years, and my mates will back me up on this, is on nights out, I don't want any attention. I'm not trying to be the centre of attention, not trying to show off or any of this.
Yeah.
But if I've worked on something, I want people to look at it and enjoy it. I want people to like it, but that's two different things. It's not just needing, it's why, I think we were talking before we started recording, it's why when I stopped making music and playing live, I've not missed it at all, because it was never really about, look at me. It was about, look at this song that I've slaved over.
Yeah.
And once I'd played them all to everyone, I've not needed that kind of, that being on stage and everyone's screaming. It's like, no, that's now a terrifying thought.
There is a sort of, you are, I don't know if you feel like this with doing live stuff, but like doing live comedy, like I've not done it for over a year now.
Mm.
And sometimes you do something and it kind of goes well, and then maybe you do it a few times at a few different nights, and then maybe it starts to expose itself because you're not just in adrenaline mode. And then all the other, this basically showing off thing does sort of set in, and you're a bit like, you sort of feel a bit weird about it.
Yeah.
And you sort of, it's a bit like on a come down, and you sort of feel a bit like, oh, what am I doing it for?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What did I do? What was I doing all that time?
Yeah.
Was that really me?
Yeah. I think there is basically a massive part of it that is just, you get sort of addicted to this kind of buzz and this feeling of like working a room or whatever it is, that audience connection. It is really fun. And I don't know. I've never done it long enough for it to be the thing. I've always been a bit of a part-timer.
Yeah.
So I'll like, that's also another reason I've sort of stopped doing it, is because it does, you know, it takes over sometimes a week for like a little 10-minute sort of thing. And if it goes well, it's like, this is great. Let's have some drinks. Let's sort of like bask in all the kind of adrenaline of it all. But if it doesn't, it's just, why am I doing this to myself? Like, I've put myself in this position where I'm now annoyed because maybe like half the room didn't like it or something.
Yeah.
But I'm just describing what comedians have to go through,
world,
really.
It's a weird world. Well, let's talk again. We're 45 minutes in and we barely talked about Big Boys. Let's talk about it a bit, because how is the set? Like, how are you as someone on set anyway? Do you become the more life of the party guy in those filming periods? Or, because I've seen an easy example I'll give is a guy who's been on the podcast who I love dearly. I'm a Chad Hapatel, who was in the Willow series and is in The Creator. He's amazing.
He's saved my life at one of those. You know, we go to these like fancy, you get invited to these fancy parties.
Yeah.
And I'd met him years ago before.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anyone there. And I turned up to this thing like, okay, I've been invited to this sort of, what is it?
Event.
And you're sort of meet in the room, basically.
Yeah.
You're not really, I guess everyone is really.
Yeah.
And I sort of saw him, and I basically was like, stay with me.
Can we hang out?
Please, because this is so awkward. But it was, he's lovely.
Well, he's the perfect person for that. But he would post videos of them in between scenes and that on Willow, and they're dancing and having the most fun. And I was sitting there thinking, this is so fun. Equally, I would be on a chair just there watching everyone, enjoying it, but watching everyone. Like my instant thought was, I love a bit of a laugh at that, but I'm for some reason not that outgoing guy, yeah. But I'm never against it either. I said, I watched all these videos thinking, this is so good, but I also know if I was there, I'd be such a fucking boring prick. Just kind of
I should say...
You all enjoy yourselves.
Yeah, I'm definitely not like always Mr. Quiet and whatever, and I'm sure lots of my friends would be like, shut up, you're always showing off and shouting and whatever. But I think, yeah, on the set, yeah, it depends really. I'm always very happy to be there and I always like going to work and always like, you know... Yeah, I do, but I can be a bit serious sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think,
yeah,
maybe, and sort of just, you know, I do take it seriously as well. The way
it's a great show for exactly that. I guess it will be so funny and so joyous, but then there will be these really heavy and serious moments. So I guess you need to find that balance
as a
performer as well. You can't just be there kind of having a laugh at all points if you need to get in that space.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone seems to kind of just get it. And if I have to do a scene where it's sort of a bit heavier, a bit more serious, if all the crew are like Jim, the director, always says he loves it when the crew, like without being asked about anything, they'll be like, say there's a scene going on. And as you know, like say we're in a living room and it's a real living room. So things get really cramped. There's loads of gear in there. There's loads of people in there. And obviously your job is to sort of pretend they're all not there. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing this quite intense scene and you're sort of surrounded by people, is the crew do this thing where they kind of like try and make themselves as small as possible and like crouch or like they've just got all their backs, they're like hiding behind curtains and like, I think...
Weird thing to try and give you privacy in such in a way, non-private thing. I love
but
that.
It's just a sort of like, so say you know, you're finishing a scene and you're charging off out here and you might charge off camera and then just be stood in someone's face, basically.
Yeah.
So everyone always gets it. You know, everyone always understands when the scene is, and maybe that conversation is being had with, I assume, with Jim and heads of department, like make sure everyone knows, but I'm not privy to those chats, so I wouldn't know. So, but yeah, you know, it's sweet.
Yeah.
It's sweet. And then obviously, yeah, it's lovely and it's fun. And
it's such an amazing cast and crew. I mean, Jim, as said, Jim's been on here. I thought Brian and Charles was one of my films of 2022, I think it was, wasn't it? Just astounding. And then Big Boys as well. He just seemed to have a back-to-back, just he knows what he's doing. And actors seem to enjoy working with him, which isn't always the case with great directors. It's like sometimes it's a nightmare, but they make good stuff, so you do it anyway. Everyone who talks about him seems to adore the dude.
Yeah, I mean, he made quite a lot of sort of short films and I know he worked with the... Do you know the FA improv lot? There's sort of an improv group in London, like Graham Dixon and I think obviously like Liz and loads of people. There's loads of like British actor comedians that do this FA improv thing. And I know Jim did it as well.
Right.
So I think, he's obviously a fan of comedy and he made just loads of great shorts for a while. And I think that's... And he always made them, they always sort of stood out to me because they looked good as well.
Mm.
And often part of the joke, you know, he would get to make his own joke, which is, I'm sending up this kind of film.
Yeah.
You know, so Brian and Charles is this art documentary.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to him ages ago, I was talking about some comedy thing. This was even maybe when we were doing the pilot for Big Boys or whatever. And I was like, maybe comedy just can't look that good.
Mm.
Because, like, maybe that's built into it that it has to look a bit naff.
And he's
like,
being funny.
He's like, nah.
No,
it can look really good.
Yeah.
We're going to make it look really good. So, and,
I mean, how is it? I think I saw this question, or maybe this question was asked at the Series 2 premiere on the video bit, but
yes, I wasn't
how
there.
Is Jack as a presence on set? Because he's in a really weird role, because he's the narrator. He is in it every now and then. He's the writer. Often writers won't be, particularly in film, the writers won't generally be involved on set. In TV, they will a lot more. But
I think that's still
a weird role.
Yeah, I think it's still quite a new thing in this country. I think it was more common in America.
The showrunner, right?
Yeah. So I definitely think that's an adjustment thing for people, for crew, for everyone. Like, okay, so there's someone on set that is sort of another authority on set, basically.
Yeah.
So I think, it's interesting. I mean, I've not really done it on many other shows, but yeah, having Jack there, I think, is really why the show is kind of sort of as enjoyable as a job as it is a lot of the time.
Mm.
Because it's just a reminder, isn't it, that like this is sort of really, this is someone's story, right?
Yeah.
And in a sort of cheesy kind of way, yeah, it sounds, but like you kind of feel that responsibility and you feel, I don't know, you sort of, yeah. And like you were saying, that kind of 1 minute is funny, 1 minute is sad. Both of those things, I feel we can kind of experience more because Jack's just around and he's there. And yeah, he is really, I mean, you know.
He is funny and he is sad. So it's perfect funny and there sad to draw from.
But he's very funny to have around on set. He's just lovely. And yeah, it's an interesting process because he's so involved in it.
Mm.
And he's sort of willing for everyone else to be sort of really involved in it. So you do feel very part of the whole
process.
Well, that's
it. It feels like a real collaboration. And again, I think everyone in it, I think Azuka, Dylan, Katie, everyone is just, you've got such a good team there. And that's one of the things that was exciting about series two is you do kind of, it becomes even more of an ensemble show rather than about these two characters, definitely, and their relationship. It becomes about everyone. I don't know, you can't always tell, but from watching it feels like a lovely set,
yeah,
to be part of. It feels like everyone is involved, everyone's opinions are valued, everyone's having input, and yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It's lovely. I suppose you get lucky, don't you? Because I've definitely done jobs where the opposite has happened, where there's no real reason, but it's just all those kind of different parts have just kind of not quite melded together. And one thing goes wrong, the wheels come off, and then suddenly it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to get through it. And to be honest, any film set can feel a bit like that sometimes. It is madness. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're making a film in 6 weeks with like a tenth of the budget or something.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
And I suppose now, because of the streamers, there's this sort of, people want more out of their telly.
Or how do you feel about the kind of transient nature of TV these days? Because the first series of Big Boys is surely an example that you all slaved over it. It came out and people lost their minds. Like, it got such good reviews. I mention this constantly, but Jack was referred to as the new Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Michaela Cole, things like this. But then everyone moves on. It's this excitement for a real concentrated amount of time. But because you can binge it, it's then, oh, we're onto whatever's next now.
It's also sort of getting used to, like, the, you know, like, obviously once upon a time when we were growing up, you would have a lot more people would have watched it because it was on telly at a time, and that's what's on. So
that's
we're all watching.
People are watching, yeah.
So you just would see it. Whereas now, the good side of it is that I can go about and most people haven't seen it.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you sort of, during this period when, like you say, the reviews are coming out and people are saying these amazing things, it is kind of honed into a particular, I don't know, it sort of seems more metric. Is that the word?
Yeah, maybe.
Is that what that means?
No, I don't think so.
What does metric mean?
Metric is just a measurement, isn't it?
Right, okay. So what more, I mean is more, like, focused into a group of people.
Yeah. I get what you're saying here, weirdly, and again, I don't want to keep bringing it back to me, but it feels like my whole career, that most people didn't know who I was, but the ones who did really cared about it. And that's what, from what you're saying, again, I feel Big Boys has been, I think everyone I talk to knows of it and loves it. So, you know, it feels like it's maybe bigger than you're realizing there, but I get that kind of thing of those who care, really fucking care, like this show.
Yeah.
People aren't just like, oh, that was good.
Yeah, like, what would be the last show where a show of, say, Big Boys, how popular it is, if we were on a time when it was on TV, it's on at 9 o'clock on a Thursday or whatever.
Yeah.
I probably would walk down the street and every time I walked down, someone would probably say something or whatever, you know, like, I don't know what the last version of that would be. Well, but now,
let's,
I think,
just throw,
people,
again, it's a big one, but let's throw In Between Us.
Exactly,
it's,
that.
It's college, it's, you know, exactly. it's that time, it's that age. And that was, they couldn't walk down the street without Bus Wanker or whatever else.
So I think,
yeah, it's an interesting point.
I think that's not there now, I don't think. So, like, there is still people, you could go into a room and they'd be like, oh, right, it's on, I don't watch Channel 4. Some people do just watch Netflix or whatever the three or four streamers they watch.
Yeah.
because I grew up with them, I still see Channel 4 and BBC as these kind of like, they're my go-to.
Well, that's the
and
thing,
I miss
isn't
out.
It?
It means I miss out on stuff. People talk about things and I don't know. TV for me is still something that I want to switch off to as much as it is. I can't, if I've really enjoyed a good show, I can't just be like, right, what's the next one?
Yeah.
I need a bit of time off. I need a bit of Pottery Throwdown for a while and just to
And it
come
is
down.
Weird, isn't it? Because I think you're completely right that I always, like having moved into acting quite late, I'll announce something I'm in and I'll be so excited. And it'll be like, this means the world to me. It's been so good to work on. It's this amazing thing. And then the first thing, is it on Netflix? So no, it's not on Netflix. It's like, all right.
Yeah.
So
what's it on? I
forget
don't know
it
if
then.
Got that.
Yeah, let's just move on from it then. It's like, if it's not on Netflix, it's not.
Yeah,
it doesn't exist.
It is.
It's a weird thing.
It is weird. And like, I think we are all sort of still making things. Well, like I'm writing at the moment and I am still writing in my head. I'm still sort of basing it on the stuff I sort of grew up on to some degree or like the stuff I still watch now. And I suppose that's what Jack did. You know, he is inspired by all the things he watched growing up, but he just has, I guess, brought it up to, you know, it's more now.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a funny one because I really want for ages. It sounds daft, but I want live TV. Whenever I'm in like a hotel room, I'm like, gonna just flip through some channels for an afternoon.
Yeah.
But I can't. I have to go in and out of apps on my TV because I don't have.
This recently that it's such a generational thing. Like I've got Sky. Only reason I've got Sky is because we've had Sky. That's what we do. Whereas anyone.
Yeah.
A year younger than me is like, no, you don't have actual
But
channels,
I'm going to
have
to
apps.
Get this.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's, do you know what there's going to be? Like, there's going to be a sort of box you can buy.
Yeah.
It'll be called like, Brit Box. It'll be called like the Geriatric Brit Box or something. And we'll all be there kind of in our old age, flicking through old TV shows. I mean, that
and
does
paying
exist.
A fortune to do
oh,
it
yeah,
as
yeah.
well.
We'll be paying loads of money.
Yeah,
and there'll so be dumb. A square TV as well.
Yeah.
And we can all sit there and like pretend we're...
To complete my complete attack on Sky, Sky, like racism, is just going to have to die out. So it is just going to be a generation of people who die and their contracts are cancelled because none of us are cancelled until then. It will just be because, but equally, no young people are going, oh, I'll get a good Sky deal. I'll get my Sky box in and get all these different channels. But no, you have Netflix, you have Prime, you might have Disney, you might have Apple, you know.
Yeah, they'll you know, like you see like a video on social media and it's like, this couple moved into this house, this 300-year-old house and found this thing underneath it and it would be like a room with Sky on or something. And it'll be like, and everyone will gather, you know, everyone will come around to flick through channels.
No. All that will be under is the things that they've recorded onto their Skybox, which again seems insane now that I record things onto my Skybox rather than just watch them when I want to through the app. So no, I've recorded it. I'll fast forward through the adverts.
But I do think there is something to be said for something you can kind of ignore.
Yeah.
You know, and also like if you go through the apps, like, okay, well, I'm picking something good.
Mm.
I'd be mad to pick something, I don't know, that I'm not really going to watch.
Yeah, it's weird. YouTube and Twitch have become that for me now. So Twitch is a really good one for, I've got other stuff I need to be doing, but I want something on or I want something I want to ignore a bit or I'm, you know what I mean?
I'm thinking like, I'm cleaning the kitchen. It's the morning I'm getting breakfast ready and I'm just pottering about and there's that sort of TV on in the background kind of thing.
Yeah.
Would you have Twitch on for that?
Yeah, I probably would. Depending, like if someone's like, a lot of streamers stream late and I'm quite an early night boy. I'm not crazy early night, but I'm pre-midnight. So if someone's been streaming late, I might just pop that on my iPad.
I don't know, right? I could be wrong with Twitch. I don't know much about it. I've seen little clips of people do it.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit like podcasts where if I'm on my own, fine. So say, for example, if I'm listening to a podcast and for some reason, I don't know, my headphones are out or whatever, I just listen to it on my phone out loud.
Yeah.
And my wife comes in, I sort of sometimes sort of think, oh, sorry.
It's like 100% that.
Right.
There's too much to explain. Most of the time, there's too much to explain.
There's something really like, personal and a little bit like, not grubby, but...
I completely understand you on that. When I had David Earle on, because he does Twitch,
right,
we did a section to talk about Twitch. In fact, I had a comedian, Marilyn Robertson on recently, and we talk about Twitch a bit in there, and someone commented how funny it was that how many times I apologised for us talking about Twitch, because it felt like a dirty... I'm so sorry for all the listeners who don't... I'm so sorry for everyone who doesn't understand what this is. It's like, we'll move on in a minute, I promise.
Yeah, it's like YouTube wormholes, I guess, were the first thing where it was like something you do kind of on your own when you probably should be doing something else.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it has that... I sort of, it looks like that to me. Like, I feel like if I get into it, before I know it, it's like I'm going to be watching some Twitcher who walks around, I don't know, the Lake District.
Yeah.
And that's what... And I watch that now every... And it's sort of weird.
Yeah. I don't know if it is the correct term, but for some reason, Twitcher felt offensive.
Also, some Twitch, the word is wrong, isn't it? It's sort of, yeah, exactly. So curtain good. Twitcher, yeah, yeah. Twitcher, the Twitcher.
You're a Twitcher, are you? No.
Twitching, it's, it doesn't seem, it's not like.
I'm not a Twitcher, I Twitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe I mean, I'll get into it. To wrap things up, what is ahead? You mentioned coming out of drama school and wanting to write plays and films and TV and whatnot. And you mentioned you kind of. Potentially working on some things now. Is that the goal? Is that the plan? What's ahead?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing at the moment. And I'm sort of trying to write. It's annoying because I think doing it on your own is tricky. Anyone who's tried to write things knows. It's it's really hard to keep that momentum going sometimes. And I think the process of development in TV or film or whatever is... Sometimes it can add to it. Sometimes it can like move it forward in a great way. Sometimes it can put a big, you know, it can just like kill it dead. So it's a really delicate thing to kind of protect it, to keep it your thing. And I've done a few things where I've kind of allowed them to sort of run away with it. And it's kind of it's become a bit of a sort of Frankenstein. So I do enjoy it, but I have to be honest that like the process of making something is better with other people and like leaning into that and sort of beavering away on your own in your room when you're into it and it seems to be working. It is a good feeling and you feel like, wow, I got so much done. But when you sort of hand it over to someone else, it's sort of really annoying when they sort of point things out and you think, well, if we're going to do this, then what's the point?
Or having someone to bounce it off during the beavering away process.
I think that's the key.
Again, I've got a mate. Like I tend to write quite on my own. I am that beaver away, and then when someone says there's a slight problem with it, bury it forever. But I've got a mate who I kind of write with sometimes.
Yeah.
And my role there half the time is just.
Exactly.
While he's going along, I'll come in with a couple of bits and it just motivates him to keep going. Because I'm quite good at that. I need to finish this. Some people aren't. So having that little bit of input and
I think
finding the
it.
Right collaboration, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I think sort of doing it on your own is, I don't know, you kind of go down a certain path as well. Because like, you know, when you're in your own head, you kind of get off on how clever and interesting you can be.
Yeah, yeah.
And... You know, I always find it with editing. Like I haven't done it for ages, but making stuff and then editing it myself. I love editing as a process. It's really, it just feels really creative in a really distilled sort of way.
Yes.
And you could edit something for, you know, there's so many different options basically when you're editing. You could go down so many different avenues and then you feel like you've cracked it. And then you'll be like, this is the edit. And you could watch it and be like, this is great. And then someone comes in and watches it with you and you don't even need them to say anything. You can see where all the problems are.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's like with writing sometimes is you sort of protect it from other people because it's going to be full of these like holes and problems and whatever. So yeah, it feels like it's the balance of being like, well, look, there's going to be holes in it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And also just letting people in and letting people read it or letting people, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And but, there's, the annoying thing, or the reason there are like fucking Instagram pages dedicated to writers' tips and things like that is there's no actual one answer to it. It's such a fluid thing and such a constantly evolving thing that there's no solution.
No, and I feel like when I first ever wrote was when I was younger and I sort of did it for a kind of, maybe it was a little bit like you were saying earlier, sort of pretending to be a, I don't know. I just sort of did it. I had a notepad. If I'd be on a train or at home, and it wasn't really for anything. It was just like working it out,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
And now it's for TV or it's for film or it's for something.
There's a pressure.
It sort of feels, it's just, it's interesting.
I'm going to end the podcast there because there's loads I want to say about that, but I can't say it on the record. So we're going to have a big discussion afterwards because there's so much I'm relating to here that stuff that I can't kind of announce or talk about yet.
You said on Sky Cinema, you might as well.
Yeah, fuck it. Well, anyway, so let me get into it. I want to add that Smothered is one of my series of the year, and that's a Sky original. Thank you for coming on, mate. Is there anywhere you want us to point people? Like, you're on social media and stuff?
Oh, I wouldn't waste your time.
Actually, there's one thing at the end, and we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but I've noted down Amen Hayes.
Thank you.
Can we talk a little bit about this?
Because
you sent me a CD and I loved it. And
so I sent you, a friend of mine who passed away, and he used to rap basically. Mm. And he was a big fan of yours. And I had these CDs, and I sort of, after we first chatted, I was like, basically, can I send you one of his CDs?
Yeah.
It's purely for my own weird little sort of, I don't know, you just do things like that.
Yeah.
It kind of keeps him alive a bit in your head.
Yeah.
I like the idea that you would have this thing that he made.
Yeah.
So I did. When I eventually found it, I mean, these old CDs that he'd made. So it was...
I loved it. It was really good. It made me think of kind of a DJ Format era and Ugly Duckling and that kind of thing. I've got it in my car still, as I said. I've really enjoyed it.
It's definitely that sort of suburban kids taking up hip-hop
and being
a kind of... What did they call it? Sort of backpackery
kind of hip. Yeah, that kind of
thing mixed with a sort of comedy, hip-hoppy thing.
Yeah. But again, I love stuff like this. One of the things, I think we talked off mic after we last recorded with Jack, one of the things that you, me and Jack all connect on is we've had a mate who we've fucking loved who isn't here anymore.
Yeah.
And for me, I talk about it a lot. April 25th is my favourite day of the year because it's the anniversary of my mate's death. It was also his birthday, but that's the year that I'm guaranteed we're going to have loads of discussion about him, loads of memories. Yeah. We'll go around his mum's and we'll have a barbecue normally.
Yeah.
And we'll hear the same stories every fucking year, but it's beautiful. And I think death, obviously, and loss and grief can be horrible things, but when you can get to that point that remembering and celebrating them is a highlight and puts a smile on your face, it's a beautiful point to get to. So as soon as you mentioned this CD, I was like, let's fucking do it. Because I know, I know exactly how I would have, I could see that being my mate and the exact same thing.
Funny enough, it happened around, it was in Thailand, which is where he lived. He was a boxer.
Right.
So it kind of was this nice sort of full circle kind of moment a bit, really. Because I'd never been out there. I'd never visited him whilst he was out there.
Right, yeah.
So I appreciate you it is kind of purely for me, really.
Yeah.
Also, that era was really funny because, like, maybe you can relate as well. Like, hip-hop, I was into it when I was younger.
Yeah.
Then I sort of went to uni and it was sort of all indie, you know, like, you shoegazy music and you start going to, like, I don't know, Muso-y type things, which was great. That's sort of where I really got into music. But then meanwhile, like, I'd really got back into hip-hop and sort of discovered UK hip-hop, which I didn't really know first time around. And then I would sort of, like, after uni or around uni time, we'd go to these gigs in, like, a pub in Aldershot where it was, like, five old men and then a back room of a pub, and it would just be full of, like, you know, young blokes just to listen to this sort of hip-hop collective from, I don't know, wherever.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt a little bit like, I always sort of coveted my mum and dad's sort of punk experience because they were like around then and they used to hang out with Crass and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
wow.
But yeah, and so it kind of had that feel to it a little bit.
Yeah.
It was just funny.
You've got your own scene and feel like something.
I wasn't fully a part of it, but it was a sort of scene where you could go. I remember we went to see guys who worked with Ad on those music, they were called Twisted Link. And they, I think, were supporting Jest in Southampton. And we all drove down to Southampton for this gig. And I think at one point our mates were like, we were like pushing our mates to get up. People got up and rapped. It was sort of a bit chaotic.
Yeah.
And it was quite fun, yeah.
I love those eras of travelling to gigs.
I never did it really for anything else, really.
I had one period where is when I was working in HMV and there was a load of us who were all just into different kind of music. But like someone would be on in Oxford and we'll all go to Oxford for this show in someone's van, or we'll go Brighton or wherever else, and we'll either sleep in the van or come back. And it was this small period. It's not like I was doing that my whole life. It's this small period that it was, and again, it was exactly that. It was all people who weren't that big, but in our world, they were the biggest thing in the world. So then you get to go to, and it does feel exciting. And loads of the bands we went to see, I probably couldn't name them now, but for that small period, they meant everything, and it was really important, and it felt so we were in on something.
We went. I remember there was a band called, I want to say Thunderbirds Are Now. I'm pretty sure that's what they're called.
Yeah, that sounds like
them. And that sounds like a band.
Early 2000s,
Yeah, early 2000s. And we sort of, my mate was especially into them, and I sort of, I was like, yeah, I quite like them as well. And we kind of went to so many of their gigs that they sort of, well, I was under the impression that they sort of knew us by this point.
Yeah.
And just like going over and be like, hey guys, how you doing? And just looking at me like, what? What? In a, like in a Weatherspoons as well. Before their gig, under like, round the corner. Oh God.
All right guys, it'll be a good one tonight. Yeah. Enjoyed you in Alder Shot. Well, as I said, I appreciate you sending it and I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad we got to have this chat, mate.
Yeah, me too.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. What a just what a lovely man. Just what a lovely man, I would say. And I will also say that there was excitement in the Acast office when John came in to record this, because there's a few people in Acast who are a bit of a fan of Mr. John Poynton. So that was lovely to see excited faces. I'm not naming anyone, Lizzie, but yeah, it was wonderful. As I said, watch Big Boys, watch everything we talked about. Just do as we say, basically. Smothered was fantastic and massively overlooked. I recommend that. Yeah, I'll be back next week with another wonderful guest. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. In fact, next week, I'm going to tease you. I've got, in my opinion, a grime legend on next week. An unsung hero of grime that is just recently starting to get the flowers that they deserve. So tune in next week for that. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.